'Tis the season of holidays and cheer and mass spending at the mall. For many people, the holidays are a time of family and joy and Martha Stewart entertaining, but for most of us, it's a mixed bag. This time on Reality Check, we're troubleshooting Christmas and hopefully making suggestions to make your holiday even more merry. So tonight we have with us Dan Sherman, Ray Gary, and I'm Lee Tooley, your host. And we're going to delve into Christmas and all the pros and cons of it all. I thought maybe, guys, if you want to say hello, we'd start with your memories of Christmas when you were a child. What was wonderful and what was awful when you were little?
I grew up poor, so.
There's that.
Christmas could be up and down.
I was probably poorer than you were.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
What'd you have for breakfast?
Today?
No, when you were a child, what did you have for breakfast?
White bread with butter and sugar was a frequent breakfast.
Coffee grounds, that's what I got.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned
that. We couldn't afford coffee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So tell me what was awful about being poor at Christmas.
Well,
I mean, that should be self-evident, but let's hear a little bit.
Yeah, and as a kid, I mean, I think kids kind of expect the Santa Claus to reward them.
Right.
Whether they've been good or not, I think, you know, you just kind of expected, okay, it's Christmas and I'm going to get cool stuff.
Yeah.
And all of your friends are getting cool stuff. So
right.
If you don't get cool stuff, then that socially hurts. It
of
really
course.
Does because, I mean, you know.
And you go back to school and have to say what you got.
Yeah, Joey's got a brand new bike. And what did I get? Well, I got a little rubber band powered little thing that flies and that was it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for me, it was, and I wasn't poor all of my childhood. I got tossed around a lot between my mother, my father, my grandparents on one side of the family or the other. And the family on my mother's side was basically poor. And my father's side, my grandparents, they weren't rich, but they were comfortable. And so if I was with my grandparents, and I did, I got my new bicycle for Christmas. I think it was 8 or something like that. And I got a new bicycle for Christmas. And that was a good memory that I had. But there was another Christmas that I remember. I think it was 11 or 12, something like that. And I got a little rubber-powered plane, you know. And at that age, it's hard to appreciate that somebody has sacrificed in order to give you a gift.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was all of a $2 gift, but, you know, it was an important $2 at the time. And so I regret that I did not have the appreciation to say, well, okay, I would rather eat than, you know, get a lavish gift or something like that. But it still kind of comes down to that, are you wearing the in clothing of the day? Are you... and of course, you know, as a guy, I wanted toys.
Right.
And
but being in is so important at that age.
Yes. Well, I think it is. Well, it is all of our lives, but it's like my father said, when you hit 50, you tend to have a different frame of mind. You're not
right.
concerned about being in quite so much.
Yeah.
But as a kid, you're. You know, the whole structure of being raised as a kid is that you're constantly being told to do things right.
Mm-hmm.
You need to know the right answer in school. You know, did you do your homework? You have to essentially show up and meet the task. And so it's a constant test. And socially, I think that socially, it's more important for children to feel like they fit in socially. And to me, that's why we have such a big problem today with, you know, kids that are bullying one another and the suicide rate amongst kids is sky high. And
it's only gotten worse.
And it's only gotten worse.
Yeah.
I saw it this morning that between ages of 5 and 9, the suicide rate is climbing. It's very, very high.
That's crazy, isn't it?
It's tripled or something this year.
Mm-hmm.
So
between 5 and 9.
Yeah.
And
so, Ray, tell me about your Christmas. You said you guys were poor, too.
Yeah. I think looking back, though, I don't really remember being that materialistic. You know, my friends got all kinds of nice stuff, and I got whatever I got, and I don't maybe it happened, but I don't remember. You know, it was like I got a better bike than you did, or something like that.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
I can remember though. I just put together a Christmas show on my regular. Well, it's a special, but what I call Christmas music that doesn't suck. And I can remember as a kid, every year we would look forward to the Bing Crosby special and the mm-hmm. and the all those old people that your parents like were having Christmas specials, and every year they were the same thing, and I don't know why we look forward to them. It just seems odd.
It's but tradition.
As far as the monetary aspect of Christmas, when I was a kid, I worried more about where I was going to get money to buy the presents I had to buy. I had to buy my mother and father something, and I had to buy my brother something, and
right.
that was as far as my presents went. But and then when I would acquire a little bit of money just before Christmas, I'd usually spend it on myself, and then I would worry, well, where am I going to get money for Christmas? That was more my problem with being poor.
Well, oddly, my problem with Christmas was that we weren't poor, but we were very materialistic. And I, being a kid, didn't really grok materialism at all, you know. And I actually have a photograph of me, my grandparents' living room, which they were very big on everything, very social in L.A., and they won the award for the best Christmas tree every year, which that in itself was an arduous, complex thing where the persons that were good friends that could do it would come in and design the tree, and it would be a big thing for 2 weeks ahead of time, and then it'd compete and yada, yada, yada. But this picture in this living room with the award-winning tree every year was about 20 by 40 feet. And half that living room was full of presents for me from people I didn't know who just were friends of my grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a picture of me asleep in the middle of the sea of presents. And to me, that just summed up the whole thing of Christmas. I just wanted out of there so bad because it didn't have any meaning. I mean, for one thing, we were Jewish. At least that side of one side of the family was Jewish. The other side was not. My grandmother would sit there as I'm opening presents going, oh, well, let's see, that was Tilda and George, and they sent potholders? Oh, my God, you know what I sent them? And she'd be making a list of every present unwrapped so she could write the appropriate thank you note afterwards. Mm-hmm. But it was always this very critical thing, you know, and that just broke my heart, really. And anyway, and then there was a thing about being Jewish, so I didn't know the Christmas carols and all the things that go with Christmas. And so mm-hmm. I felt incredibly left out, and prejudice was not a rare thing against Jews in those days anyhow, so it just really reinforced my differentness and my not belonging.
How could you have celebrated Christmas so much and not know the Christmas carols?
Well, I had a half and half family. So the grandmother, that was on the Goyish side, the Gentiles, and then the other half was the Jewish side. And they put up a tree just because, you know, they lived in America.
But, I mean, your family won the prize for the best Christmas tree.
Yeah, that would be on the Gentile side.
One of your parents?
My grandmother was, you know, the head of the show.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I just wonder how you didn't pick up Christmas carols and the like at the same time.
Well, we didn't really do Christmas carols. We just did lots of presents.
Did you have a clue what Christmas was about?
Not really.
Other than
at all.
Presents.
I mean, it's something to do with Jesus, which also was a mystery to me. But I wasn't curious, really. I mean, and I still do. I like the lights. The lights are nice. And then there'd be like this huge Christmas night dinner with like 150 people. My grandmother, who was 5'2", if she was standing in her heels, would be walking in the house with a 23 or 4 pound turkey in each hand, you know. That was a nice image, I remember. And then, you know, the black maid would help cook everything, and it was cooking for days and all of that. But, you know, when the thing finally happened, there'd be like this huge dining room table that would sit 20, and it was just nobody was sitting at it because it was too many people to sit at. It would just be a giant buffet, and all these people I didn't know were wandering around. There was just no sense of anything. connecting with other people in it. It was, you know, I'd get a pat on the head from somebody I didn't know once in a while.
But
it was a pretty alienating experience.
You didn't get a sloppy makeup encrusted kiss, though.
Probably from somebody I didn't know as well, yeah.
That was always one of the things I looked forward to the very least when my aunts were coming. I'd get this pinch and, oh, you're so handsome, and they'd give me a kiss, and they were usually drunk and had on way too much makeup and lipstick, and oh, God, that was an awful experience.
Yeah, yeah. We have all of these awful experiences that go along with the holidays.
Yeah, maybe we'll come to some resolution as to why we don't like Christmas tonight. We'll do a analyzing.
I know that the suicide rate goes up during the holidays.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I think the divorce rate also goes sky high. It is a stressful time.
Well, and right after Christmas, because everybody hangs in there till Christmas, and then they get the hell out of there in January.
Yeah.
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 And oops.
When you look at the history of where the whole holiday business comes from, essentially what happens is that you grow stuff all during the growing season, and then you harvest it, and you put it away, and you hope that it survives. I know that in this part of the world, the Russians were here in the 1800s, and the United States bought Alaska from them, withdrew from here, and the reason that they did was because the grain that was put in the silos would not keep because the humidity and the rain and everything else. And so it was hard living in this part of the world anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go back even a couple hundred years easily, but if you really go back to real ancient times, go back a few thousand years, and people really did live with real hardships. And then so you had these stores that you put into whatever, the basement, the silo or whatever, and you crossed your fingers and hoped that they would last you through the winter.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they would, maybe they wouldn't. But essentially what's happening at this period of time is the days are getting shorter and shorter and shorter, and people get more and more depressed. There are people who take drugs because the days are getting so short. They're getting so depressed, they have to take drugs to essentially snap out of it. So the business of what any of these holidays, these winter holidays are about, is that they're essentially a celebration for that. Oh, finally, the days are starting to get longer, and we're going to celebrate with what we've got and cross our fingers and hope that springtime actually does get here.
Yeah, I mean, I think if I remember my history correctly, that the decision to make Christmas when it is has to do with co-opting a lot of solstice celebrations and so forth, when people would be celebrating the return of the light.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And
talk about being depressed in the dark in places where we have long extended dark, like Alaska, and
which is where you're from,
right? we actually would sit. They would be prescribed to sit under lights for so many hours a day. Just lights like we have here, a regular canopy kind of thing of lights.
And we can do that now that we have electricity. We have the power to turn on the lights, but that hasn't been the case except for just, the last 100 years or so that we had the ability to turn on a lot of lights and enjoy the house as we are.
Well, I think some of that has to do with vitamin D for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And people are more aware that they need vitamin D and they take supplements and so forth. But I'm actually that way myself. I purposely make sure that my contact lenses aren't tinted so that I don't. No, I know it sounds silly, but it makes a difference to me.
But it makes a difference.
It does.
Yeah,
it does.
I mean, if you wear glasses, you can take off your glasses. But if you're wearing contacts and they're slightly tinted, then you're...
Yeah, they put a blue tint on them, which is the last thing I need.
Yeah.
But, so vitamin D helps and all of that. But, yes, it's a tough time of year. The Chinese folks, traditionally, not modern China, but traditional Chinese medicine talks about this time of year as the metal time, which is the time of grief and loss and things dying back. They're very in touch with nature that way. And so it's a time to...
I was just a little Christmas depressed when I came in here, and you're making me worse.
We'll cheer
but
you
what
up.
They yeah. say, what they say that, that is so confusing to them is we go around turning up all the light and running around being very, very active and celebrating and shopping and wearing ourselves out when in terms of being healthy in their paradigm. The idea is when you get to that time of year, yes, you celebrate your losses, but also it's a time to kind of plant yourself in the earth like a root vegetable and vegetate and rest and sleep a lot and, build yourself up for the activity that's to come in the spring and the summer again.
It's a hibernation model.
Yeah, kind of. Mm-hmm. And it does make sense because summertime is a time when, theoretically, we would want to be the most active, long days. And, of course, it fits with farming and so forth, too. So, yeah, I'm kind of all about that.
Make hay while the sun shines.
Yes. Yeah. I like that model of being real quiet and turning off the lights and relaxing. And,
so I'm not familiar with Chinese cultures at all. Or anything in the East to speak of. I probably should be, but for whatever reason, I'm not. So you're essentially saying that in that part of the world, they don't really celebrate the winter solstice or the changing of the season in the wintertime. They're hibernating.
Well, I think, first of all, I'm talking about traditional China. It's quite different now, and a lot of the things that were part of that culture are long gone. Mm-hmm. But they see the seasons as five seasons, and this is the season for the rest. And it's not so much, feeling negatively about it, but it's part of the cycle of the season, the cycle of life.
Mm-hmm. So in all cases, though, we're celebrating the seasons, the cycles, and there's that tradition aspect of that. If we know the holiday is coming up,
right?
Instead of getting really depressed, watching the leaves fall off the trees and everything turn brown and snow and all of that sort of stuff, rather than that, you have the opportunity to celebrate in some way. If you see it coming, if you're planning for it, then that somehow is the light at the end of the tunnel.
Planning for it? I'm not sure quite
well,
yet.
Christmas. Mm-hmm. All right. You're watching everything die. Everything turn brown. The trees are bare and all of that sort of stuff. And so if you did not know the history of the last year, let's say you came zipping in from some Mars or whatever,
right?
And you didn't know that history, you might assume that everything is going to die, and that's it. That's the end of the world, as we know it. You
like
might make that
eclipse.
Assumption.
Yeah.
Yeah, but if somebody says, "Oh, yeah, but when December whatever rolls around, we're going to celebrate the whatever."
Mm-hmm.
Now you're looking forward to something. It's like you and the same with the spring. I mean, there are all of these celebrations in the spring as well that we're celebrating.
Right.
Oh, it's finally here. Things are starting to grow. There are all of these fertility kind of rituals, et cetera. But if you've got the ritual in place, that's like having the calendar. Then you can see into the future. Mm-hmm. And you know that it's not all going to die in mid-December and it will go on. But it's that business of putting the history in there and celebrating every year. That's the importance of the tradition.
Well, yeah. And I think, too, though, that in the West, we're not very good with grief and loss and things like that and dying.
Right.
So we go around lighting lights and making a big fuss because we're uncomfortable on a certain level with these things that are going on in the natural world at that point.
Yeah, it's that. It was a hard time and people did die in the winter months. And particularly if there were any kind of diseases around.
Well, even now, I think, and don't quote me on this, I have to double check to make sure I know what I'm talking about, but I believe that January and February is the high point in the natural death cycle, that if you just look across populations in general, mm-hmm. that as winter wears on, there's an increase in people dying,
mm-hmm.
just period, from old age or what have you.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, people die now because of lack of air conditioning in the summertime in certain parts of the world where it's especially hot. But people also used to die because they froze to death.
Mm-hmm. I think even aside from those things, though, it's just, you know, the darkness, and it gets to people in a way that, you know, helps them to
Ray's
let go.
Looking
kind
of sickly.
Are you?
Do you feel all right?
You reminded me of all these things I didn't like about them.
Well, let's talk about
the darkness in Alaska. Yeah. It's where I lived in the interior. It's not dark 24 hours a day and light 24 hours a day. In the summertime, it actually is light 24 hours a day. Not what you'd call sunlight daylight,
you
but
you could
sit at 2 o'clock in the morning and read a newspaper without a light. But in the wintertime, there's what they call 4 or 6 hours of daylight where we lived this time of year.
Mm-hmm.
But the daylight isn't daylight. I mean, the sun doesn't come up and go up across the sky. It goes up along the horizons
kind
a little
of
bit and skirts down. Yeah, and it's not right twilight, but it's bright, but it's not sunlight. It's not the
mm-hmm.
same.
And mm-hmm. It's thin.
Yeah, it can get very oppressive. And a lot of people have this, what they call sad seasonal mm-hmm. yeah. affective disorder.
And you managed to survive that.
I don't know how. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's only since I've moved away from that, even when we were snowboarding, I didn't really think that much of it, but just the oppressiveness of having to get up and get the car started and just things you had to do all winter
yeah,
long.
Yeah, but you had to do all that stuff in order to start the car. You had to...
Yeah, well, yeah, for years we lived without conventional electric, so I used to have a propane heater in the car that circulated water, and so before we went to bed, we had to get out and hook up the propane tank, and then when you get up in the morning, and it could be 35, 45 below zero when you're out here screwing around with a propane tank. And then hopefully the car would start, and the wind didn't come up and blow out the flame in the propane heater. And your option then was to get your stovepipe out. Everybody had like a 4-foot piece of stovepipe with a 30-degree angle at the end of it. And you had a weed burner, which is a torch that, again, you're using propane,
mm-hmm.
and it shoots out this horrible flame, and it's used for burning weeds, just like it says. And you stick that in, you light it and stick it in the stovepipe, and the stovepipe goes under your car, and you let that run
for a while
to warm up the oil and the engine so it will start.
Mm.
And it will either do that or it'll catch on fire. That happens too. A lot of people would start fires under their cars. So it was an interesting time.
Yeah, I had one of those weed burners for a while, and it's a pretty good sized blowtorch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. From Christmas to weed burners.
There were people then who heard, you use a weed burner to start your car, and they didn't hear about the pipe part.
Yeah.
Oops. So bringing it back to the childhood question, what about Santa? Did you like Santa? Was he a hero, or... did you believe in Santa?
Remember believing in Santa.
Yeah.
I probably did at one time. I don't know, but my memories before 8 years of age are really not. I have little glimpses of things, but I don't really have very many memories for whatever reason.
I remember looking at the presents piled up on the table before Christmas, and there were some from Santa. And I went, And then I thought, gee, that looks like my mother's handwriting. And that was kind of it for me, but I didn't say anything because I didn't want to lose out on those extra presents. So.
Right, because you knew he was listening.
Not really.
If he was real.
I can remember my brother trying to con me into saying, we have to get to sleep now so Santa can come. And we were living in the house that I moved into when I was about 5. So I was older than 5. I was 6, maybe 7. I don't mm-hmm. know when I still believed in it, but... the whole thing kind of didn't seem to make a whole lot of... how's it go to every house and all that kind of stuff? But
mm-hmm.
So you never were a real believer.
Before we started this conversation, we didn't tell the parents to get the little ones out of the room.
Because we
may be destroying a child's...
Right there.
Yeah, whole Christmas right now.
Well, hopefully by now the children are out of the room. The thing that I find very interesting, though, is that they talk about the spirit of Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And they talk about the spirit of giving and all of this. And that's one of those things that's beyond the mechanics of it. It's something that you feel in your heart. You like somebody and you give them a gift, and it's a feel-good kind of a thing, and it's an attitude, if you will, that overcomes a population. We've been quarreling all year about this or that, but then all of a sudden, and it's like Ray was telling me about the story that he read about the Christmas truths, and that would have been
World War One,
where the Germans and the English. You tell the story.
It started. There's a lot of legend connected to this, so every bit of it may not be entirely true, but it actually did happen, where the Germans were in their trenches, not very far away, a couple hundred yards away, and they were singing Christmas carols. And the English started singing Christmas carols, and then they started yelling back and forth at each other. And eventually, one of the two sides in this movie I just watched the other night, it was the Germans, mm-hmm. started one at a time just coming out of the trenches and walking into no man's land. Then the British did the same thing, and they spent quite a bit of time trading coffee. One side had coffee and the other side had something else.
Cigarettes or something.
Yeah, and wearing each other's hats and playing games and just having a good old time, and even the ones that didn't speak the language.
Mm-hmm.
This is supposed to be a true story.
It is a true story. Absolutely, is a true story, yes. And so this went on for quite a while. And in this movie I watched, which was actually, it was called Oh, What a Lovely War. And while it was accurate, it spoofed a lot of things. And it was a musical about World War One, so you can imagine what it was about. But the German officer said to the English officer, he says, we won't shoot at you again unless you shoot at us. And he never sort of said that, and artillery started coming into the no man's land. And there actually was a lot of concern among the officers, the higher up officers on both sides. We're not going to get these guys to fight again.
Right.
So, mm-hmm. But they did. They went back to their trenches, and when the Christmas truce was over, they went back to killing each other.
Mm-hmm. But wow. So that's the spirit of the season that comes in. And to me, when I think about Santa Claus, I define Santa Claus as that kind of a thing. And, you know, he doesn't have to be the real flesh and blood or own any reindeer or any of that in order to... It's something that comes along, and it's kind of magic, and I think it's neat, and it's badly needed,
mm-hmm.
especially in modern times as we get more and more schizoid about changing world that we can't keep up with, et cetera. So to have this warm coziness come along, and I kind of wish that some of our friends who are in the psychology business were here to speak to this as well, because I'm sure that there's something about the intimacy of being in a smaller space, you know, being confined to a home with a fire and candles and that sort of thing.
That sounds lovely. By the way, I was a therapist, so you've got one here.
Oh, okay, so go for it.
Well, first of all, that's so interesting to hear you say that, because I never associate coziness and warm fires and things in an intimate group of people with Christmas.
Hmm.
But more interesting for me anyway about that is that a few years ago when I lived in Victoria, I started doing exactly that on Christmas Eve. Everybody had their families to go to on Christmas Day and their commitments, but I'd have a very small, intimate group of friends over with lots of candles and a fire mm-hmm. in the fireplace, simple food with lots of fancy desserts, but that was optional,
mm-hmm.
but like a baked salmon and green salad and some asparagus, like really simple, healthy food. And we'd just be really quiet together and talk. And it was such a relief after all the running around for the whole month, you know. So it's just interesting. You already had that built in. I had to invent it.
Mm. We actually did. My wife and I homesteaded in Alaska, and we built a very small house. So we put some additions on it, and we had a wood stove. And we actually did huddle around the fire when it was very cold in the wintertime, and it was kind of neat. There was this little nest that we built ourselves against the elements, and we built this, and we could be inside and warm and comfortable, and it might be 45 below zero outside. It was kind of neat. Until we had to go out in a 45 below zero and start the car and go to work.
So in terms of, okay, now we're adults, what is the good part about Christmas for you now, and what would you like to do without?
Oh, because I'm an adult?
See, you're talking to two guys.
Yeah.
And Ray and I were talking before we started this that you should have had two other women come in, because to me, the women tend to be more involved with the business of any celebration, really, but especially Christmas, I think. Whereas guys tend to kind of regard it as being they show up. They tend to kind of regard it as a bit of a nuisance. It comes with a lot of stress, like, what am I going to buy so-and-so as a gift? It's expected. You have to do things. I remember when I was in business, I went to the whatever shops, usually a bakery or something like that, and I bought a bunch of cool pastries and things, and I took it around to all of my clients. It was an expected kind of a thing.
Right.
So there are all those stresses that come with it. So the female perspective, I think, is a far, far better angle to attack this whole idea of the holiday season with, because to me they're more into it. Us guys are sitting over watching TV and watching some football game.
Well, as a token female here, I mean, I could speak to that a little bit, that somebody recently was describing standing in the middle of a department store with whoever around that was part of the team, going, well, who haven't we bought for yet, and what can we possibly get them, and kind of the materialism of it, and how stressful you're fighting the crowds, and you're buying for people you don't even know what they want, and, you know, and on the receiving end, you're getting things that are, like, really inappropriate for one reason or another, and the forced spending of it, which is really hard on a lot of people, and all of that is very, very trying. I mean, I think that's one reason why, after all that, I wanted that Christmas Eve to just be quiet and make it about connection.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's what's important here. It's not how many dishes can we serve that are traditional and make everybody, you know, overfed and groggy, but how can we get together in a way that increases our connectedness with each other?
As older adults, a lot of my relatives are not bothering to exchange gifts, or if they do, it's really a token thing. It's less than $10. But for a lot of my relatives, what they are doing is they're contributing to charities instead. Whatever money that they would have normally spent for gifts, they're donating to their favorite charities.
What we do on Christmas time is... there's not many places here. I think one of the banks is where we found one last year. They have the Christmas trees.
Yes.
And the little cards on them that some kid has requested different presents. And we just pick up a card or two and buy all the presents that were on there. Mm-hmm. That way it's, you know, nothing is getting filtered through administrative costs or anything like that. They're just giving the presents to the kids. And it was something they really wanted. But I'm... This is my family has dwindled down now to basically me. I have a living brother who I haven't exchanged gifts with in years, and I don't have anybody to buy Christmas presents for this year. We, absolutely wonderful. Hey,
you're in luck. I need a gift.
Me too. I'm like, oh, thank God, I'm over that one.
And there's no Christmas decorations in my house. And I'll probably sit home in my underwear and binge watch Laugh-In.
On Christmas?
Yeah. What better way to spend Christmas? Either that, or if the weather's nice, I have several outdoor projects. Or like, was it Sotomayor? Mm-hmm. Where they asked what she was going to, where she was last Christmas, which was really a stupid question to ask a Supreme Court justice. I'll go to a Chinese restaurant and visit my Jewish friends, of which I don't have any.
So I don't have people either, but I've always looked at Christmas since I've reached this point in life where I don't have to do the obligatory celebrating. I mean, I do go to a lot of potlucks and so forth, like I'm sure a lot of people do in town, but it's really a time when I kind of do that Chinese thing. I kind of do a retreat thing. My business slows down, and I get a time when I don't have to be on call to every phone call and everything that pops up on my radar, and I can just be quiet.
Probably not a big time of year for you business-wise.
No, in fact, one of the things that has happened, probably worth mentioning, is it's great for big businesses that do a lot of Christmas sales, but the other businesses like mine, which is real estate, we just die. And so now that they've moved the Christmas shopping from December 1st to the day after Halloween, that's a whole nother month out of our income stream.
To get here, I walked by the car dealer next door, and they have big ribbons on the cars in the showroom and everything, but I'm sure their business drops to nothing as well.
Yeah.
Well,
I worked in advertising for 40-some-odd years, and I started off working for retail clients, and that meant that I worked my fanny off to produce Christmas ads for the newspaper and the TV and the what have you to promote retail. I worked for a hi-fi shop, and he did some unbelievable amount of business. It was like almost half of his business was the Christmas season. And then it died. Well, he had an after Christmas sale kind of a thing, but February was just absolutely dead.
Right.
And I was really stressed. I really, talk about hating the season, I was really stressed with that. And then I worked more for corporate clients, and I found I couldn't get anything done during the holidays.
That's the other side.
You know, from Thanksgiving until roughly mid-January, I would try to get something done, and it just didn't happen. Nobody was working. I remember sitting in a dentist's office one day, and he's filling a tooth, and he's on the phone buying a camera for somebody.
Who knows who, yeah.
Yeah, and while he's working on me, he's got a phone perched up here under his shoulder, you know, and he's saying, "No, I want the B plus model or whatever." I love that in the sense that, well, the crunch then was moved to May when I had to do the big trade shows and stuff like that. But the holiday season, at least I could enjoy the holidays.
Mm-hmm. Well, for a lot of businesses, not the one I'm in now, but in prior years, and I think this is not unusual, until tax time is over, there's no business.
Mm-hmm.
So basically you have from late April to the end of October to make your money for the year. Mm-hmm. That's almost half the year gone.
Yes.
Between the holidays and the tax time.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody's paying off what they spent at Christmas.
Yeah, and that's the other aspect of it is that, you know, a lot of people tend to go into debt for Christmas or whatever holiday. You know, if there's gift giving involved in it, they tend to go into debt and pay it off. We sure took advantage of that when I was selling hi-fis, you know. Here, finance this puppy.
Yeah. And I think it's real difficult. I mean, none of us have kids at home at this point, but, you know, what do you do when every other kid in the neighborhood is getting some really expensive gift that's a hot thing, and your kid, you can't afford to do that? How do you help your children understand that it's not because you don't love them or they're mm-hmm. unworthy or whatever else could be going through their little heads?
What popped into my mind when you said that was Jimmy Kimmel, who for Halloween, he tells parents, he says, okay, The following day, tell your kids that you ate all our candy. And the kids' reactions are mostly anger. It's really horrible. I mean, you know, all of a sudden this kid goes into a rage and says, "Mommy, I hate you." And, you know, just over candy. But, you know, that's their life.
Well, that's a boundary thing, too, though, you know.
Yeah.
It's theirs.
Yeah, that's
true. They earned it by going door to door.
Yeah, and begging.
Yeah, right.
That was my favorite holiday.
Yeah, I like Halloween.
Still is mine.
Yeah. Much better than Christmas.
You get to pretend.
Yes.
Yeah. I can pretend I'm Superman.
Yeah.
Well,
no, pretend I'm Batman.
I get the food.
Oh, the food.
Get all that candy. And I used to have, I would cobble up this incredibly large bag, bigger than a pillowcase, thinking I was going to get it filled. And I came home at the end of the night, and it was, wasn't even close. I mean, it was just this little pile of, but it was really a lot of stuff, but it didn't even come close to filling this huge bag that I had visions of filling.
But that is another aspect of the holiday season, which is that there's a lot of feast involved in it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things that I can say that runs common pretty much through all humanity. We celebrate weddings, funerals, the holidays, Thanksgiving, Easter, everything. All of these different events we celebrate with food, and that's the core of it's the cohesiveness by which humanity kind of clings together. I mean, you know, have, you know, two families getting together because the kids are getting married, they get together and they eat.
That's what every
bread.
Of socializing seems to be about for the most part.
Yeah, and
in this culture.
And so this holidays. The winter holiday season is one of the biggest ones for, I mean, you know, we all do this. We gain 10 pounds because of the holidays and spend the rest of the year trying to figure out how to get rid of it.
Well, it seems like another way to celebrate, and I do have some friends that do this in major ways, is to do something of a contribution.
Mm-hmm.
I have one friend that is going to be at St. Tim's on Christmas Day cooking.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the highlight of his year. I mean, it feels so good
mm-hmm.
to be on that side of the equation instead of
mm-hmm.
doing all this mass consumerism.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like if you did that with your kids at an early stage where they got how wonderful that is before all the other stuff took hold, it might be a bit of a defense.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to be perfect because mm-hmm. those social group pressures are still there, but... I think those can be really meaningful experiences that kids get.
Mm-hmm.
They get that, you know.
I think
just
that's a wonderful idea. Yeah, I've done that. That's
mm-hmm.
and it is. You know, spend your holiday, your Christmas, your Thanksgiving. You know, passing out food somewhere.
I mean, when you think about it, it's all one of my favorite hobby horses. Anyhow, is you know, in America these days, more people. Live alone or in some alternate kind of situation than the nuclear family that we see on the advertising and Martha Stewart and so on. Most people don't have it together to do Martha Stewart Christmas. It just isn't going to happen. And yet it makes people feel bad that they don't measure up to something that they have been persuaded is what should be happening. And yet it's a fabrication of the businesses that make money off of them for that.
Now that you mention that, I can remember that from Christmas. I was watching television and they were showing, it was something, a rah-rah about America or something like that. And they were talking about Thanksgiving or the holidays. And it said something like, whether your family is wealthy or has opulence. And they showed on the screen a picture that was apparently like your Christmas was, with tons of presents and tables full of food and everything, or a modest family, and they showed a family all sitting around a lovely table and dressed up nicely with a table with turkey and all that, a very nice thing. And I thought, oh my God, I don't even measure up to the modest family. Where am I?
Yeah.
They didn't show my family.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some of this is I think, an age-related thing. I'm just thinking of my own family where, and I've heard this said before, that Christmas is for the kids.
Mm-hmm.
And when I think of my family, when we had the young kids growing up, my sisters, they really got into the tree, and they really got into the, I remember one of my sisters made her own wrapping paper.
Right.
You know, it was a craft project, and everything was so well done. And then as the kids grew up and became adults, it's, that all just kind of went away, and things were more simply done. And the trees went from live, or not live trees, but, you know, trees from a green tree, a real tree. Mm-hmm. They went to artificial trees. They went to smaller trees that were easier to handle. And my ex-wife had a whole collection of nutcrackers, and they went on the mantle and all through the house. And
if Christmas is for the kids, how come when I go on Home Depot, which is not a kid's store by any means, I have to be subjected to Christmas music?
It's brainwashing.
I'm serious when I say
it's
this.
It's the commercialism of it.
I was in Home Depot the other day, and I literally got stuff done as quickly as I could because I could not deal with rocking around the Christmas tree and Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Yeah, but didn't you notice that the Sawzalls were all on sale and wrapped in red ribbons?
But I didn't need rocking around the Christmas tree to know that. I'm doing a little plug now for my first annual Christmas extravaganza that will be played sometime in the coming week, my Christmas music show, which nobody will be disappointed in, unless you want to rock around the Christmas
tree. But it's true. I mean, we're not all Christians. We have Jews and Muslims and Buddhists and all kinds of different folks here, and just plain non-religious people. And one of the things that I think for me is noteworthy is that I had these bad experiences in childhood when I was very young and didn't have that intellectual machinery to cope with it. And it's really in my DNA at this point that I hate Christmas carols. Everywhere I go, I hear Christmas carols.
Oh, aren't they awful?
You know, and it's not
just
if I
hear the little drummer boy again, I'm going to throw up. I point this out in my Christmas extravaganza, which is coming up in the near week. You're standing in line at Starbucks, right?
Yeah.
And you don't have any choice because you want that damn coffee. And the lady in front of you is not only complaining because the cups don't have enough Christmas stuff on them and they don't say Jesus, but she's ordering the most incredibly complicated drink that takes forever to make, and you're standing there, and all of a sudden over the loudspeakers, and he can't do a damn thing about it because you're in line, comes the little drummer boy.
Mm-hmm. That's my favorite song.
And you're sitting and you're standing there, and before you know it, you're going bum 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 bum. But you're going bum-ba-bum-bum for the rest of the day.
Uh-huh.
And maybe well into the night. You're trying to get to sleep, and your brain is going bum-ba-bum-bum. It's a horrible, horrible situation.
But now, on the other side of the coin, my ex-wife was a real Christmas carol nut.
Right. I hate her
she
already.
She loved them. And she couldn't sing on key for if her life depended on it.
Right.
But she loved walking into the stores and hearing the Christmas carols.
But the thing is that if you get a trauma when you're really young about this stuff, then it kind of sticks in your DNA whether you want it to or not. I mean, I know better. It's only a bloody Christmas carol. But my gut goes into a knot and doesn't know any better, you know. So I think I would love a world in which we were more sensitive to how many people don't feel like they fit into the Christmas whatever.
You mentioned before that America's not all Christians. And I was talking to somebody the other day and who was very upset about the fact that they have this sign at the edge of Brookings that says, Happy Holidays. And I pointed out to him that Happy Holidays refers to all the holidays, not only Christmas, but New Year's, and that there are everybody is not Christian. There are Jews and Muslims and a lot of religions and societies have holidays right around the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, this is wishing everybody that. And it had never even occurred to this guy that there were other than
I noticed
Christians.
When we made a transition to happy holidays.
Yeah, I told him I grew up in a community that was about 50% Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
I said, nobody said Merry Christmas when you were checking out. It was always Happy Holidays.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then what about when you have a family gathering and there's, you know, Uncle Joe getting drunk and having espousing his political beliefs or what have you.
Complaining about the Jews.
Or what have you, yeah. I mean, you know, everybody's got at least one of those in their family and that maybe stays in your extra bedroom for a week longer than they should. And, you know, what?
Well, I never stayed a week longer. I'd stay a day or two longer. And,
but how,
and my political views were correct.
Of course they were. But what do you.
And the alcohol was there. Wasn't I supposed to drink it? What was it there for? But go ahead.
Well, that's kind of what I had to say. How do you cope with those folks? Or do you just not invite them and have the whole family get mad at you? I mean,
This may be why I don't have anybody to buy presents for.
You know, dawned on me. I haven't been invited anywhere.
Me too.
What about the idea of having Christmas decorations, specifically Christmas, on public property? You know, when we were all kids, I'm sure every public square had a nativity scene or had something that in some way depicted Jesus. And that's pretty much been done away with now, I think. I don't know, probably places in Texas, they still do it, but.
Well yeah, that is true. But I don't have any problem with the religious displays. Because we all have some sort of a belief. Even the people who are atheists, they have a belief system by which they operate.
But the belief system doesn't include a baby lying in a manger, which never happened.
Yeah,
but so. None of that ever happened.
So what? I mean, I think the point is that people are celebrating for their own personal reasons. And so for somebody who is a Christian, it's a very personal thing to them.
But why should the tax dollars of somebody who doesn't believe in the little baby in the manger?
That is one of those issues of the concept of the separation of church and state. And so yeah, I don't really. I mean, it depends on what the locale is. I think. In Oklahoma, there are lots of little small towns. And some of these small towns are nothing but people who are from Germany. And they're all Christians, every single one of them, except for Uncle Bob, he's the drunk who shows up. And so if this whole town on their town square wants to decorate and put up symbols of a Christian faith in the town where they're all Christians, that's fine. I have no problem with that. I think the problem is that when people become offended that somebody else wants to participate in the holiday season and say, oh, you're not allowed to celebrate this time of the year because you're not one of us, then I have a problem. And that's the problem with larger cities or larger towns where you have a mixture of different religions. And then in that case, for the city to declare, okay, we're going to, I mean, how would a town that is, let's say, 48% Christian, how would they feel if the atheists and the Jewish communities and all of these other communities got together and put up some sort of a communal something in the middle of town square that celebrated, say, the Flying Spaghetti Monster? Is the Flying Spaghetti Monster, everybody know what that is? It's one of those, it's a protest, really. Somebody came up with a flying spaghetti monster, I think, I don't remember what, but it was a test case of some sort of whether or not you can be religious and believe in the spaghetti monster.
Well, there's Kwanzaa and Hanukkah and all
right,
these other holidays.
Right, so, yeah. I mean, if some sort
and
of something was erected in town
that.
Square, how would the people who are Christian feel about that? They would probably feel offended.
They might say, this is a Christian country, which gives us we could do another hour on that.
Yeah, we could.
I don't think we are a Christian company.
Of course
country.
We're not. No.
It didn't start out that way. People were fleeing from religious persecution.
From the church,
right.
Yes.
And the so-called founding fathers were mostly deists. They were not fundamentalist Christians.
Right, yeah.
And our laws are not based on the Ten Commandments.
Yeah. So
well,
there's
some
that.
Thou shalt not
a couple,
kill.
Yeah, but there's
you know,
basically
20 years to life if you kill, and
those are basically well. But you
might find
you
that
can,
in other places too,
you can,
though.
If you can kill, if you're a society and you deem somebody needs to die, then you can kill.
Yeah,
I have no problem with that.
Yeah.
Well, on that note.
Well, I'll tell you what. Now, this has been a very interesting conversation about the holidays. I mean, we could have talked about, great beef stew and scones and pineapple and upside down cake. And rumbles. We haven't talked about rumbles.
We should, though.
What is it you want to say about rumbles?
We should reprise rumbles.
Yeah, well, all right, real quickly then. Last year, I brought up that one of the things that I used to do is I used to make rum balls. Well, what I didn't realize is I made half the rum balls. I crunched up the vanilla wafers and I poured the rum in, but I didn't add the other ingredients that go in there. And so I tried to do it last year after we talked about it on the show, and they were horrible.
But the rum balls were the hit of the show.
They were the hit of the show.
They're very alcoholic, no doubt.
It became a running gag through the whole show. First of all, we realized you could eat as many of these as you want, and you get stopped on the way home, and no, officer, I have not been drinking. And you'd be perfectly honest. No, yeah. You've been eating rum balls.
You can't really get that soused on rum balls because you have to eat a lot of them in order to get any quantity at all.
Well, you know, as I'm listening to this, I'm struck by how much we haven't solved any problems. But on the other hand, my thought is that, you know, Christmas is different for everybody. Not only what you love, but what you hate and what you want to do and all of that. And the best thing I can think of to suggest is something that I've been doing for years, which is I always write myself a letter from one Christmas to the next about what I liked and what I didn't like about the last Christmas and what I thought might be worth trying in the future. And I would read that like December 1st or sometime in November. And, you know, it was really helpful. My Christmas has kept evolving because of that. And maybe that's the best way to go because it's different for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
What makes me happy is not going to make you happy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the only thing that I can say is that I think it's a cool season. It's a season of hope for me.
Ah, and, I like that.
And so, you know, if I'm going to give anybody a Christmas gift, the gift that I would want to give is that you would feel hopeful from this point on.
Well, it is a time of renewal, right?
Mm-hmm.
All that dying back is leading to renewal.
Mm-hmm.
Any last thoughts?
Right? I don't know what you're talking about, hope. Why is December 25th any more hopeful than July 3rd?
Well, yeah, ideally we would wake up every morning and say, I feel hopeful today.
Well, there's a good note.
Well, I feel happy I woke up most days.
Yeah.
Better than the alternative. So on that note, I guess we could wish everybody a very happy holiday and that you get exactly what you want this holiday, whether it's a gift or something more subtle.
Season 6 of Laugh-N.
I still want the Ferrari.
You can find it. I think it's on Amazon. That's where I watch it. Yeah, Amazon.
Yeah, I still want the Ferrari and a good rumble.
Yep.
That's a good thought. So here we are. I want to thank Dan Sherman and Ray Gary for being our guests tonight, and Pi White for our technical support. And this is Lee Tooley, the host. Thanks very much for listening to Reality Check on KCIW, and season's greetings. Happy holidays.
The opinions expressed here are those of the individual participants. Curry Coast Community Radio takes no position on issues discussed in this program.